Okay, well, explain who Odie is. It's not the dog from the comic strip.
No, we have Doug Odie Slocum, and he is not only an F-16 pilot, but he's also the director of safety.
And he laughs at our jokes.
At the Air National Guard. Good morning and good luck.
It's great to be here. How are you all?
We're doing good. You are in charge, the director of safety at the Air National Guard. Now, what does that entail?
We do a little of everything. Our job is to make sure that all the guardsmen get home safe every night. That's the 30,000 foot view of what we try and do. We're involved with flight safety. We have ground safety, weapons safety. We get into human factors. We do investigations of things, you know, mishaps and events when they happen. And then we also into a lot of proactive safety initiatives to keep bad things from ever happening to begin with. So it's a great business.
That must keep you busy.
It does. There's lots of good things, and it's nice to be here at EAA.
I'm sure you cringed last year when the F-16 went off the end of the runway here.
Yes, I cringed.
You and everybody else.
So, actually, I didn't cringe. I sat there with my mouth hanging open because I couldn't believe I actually saw it.
You know, there was a crew chief out there somewhere going, oh, no, not again.
Yep, it was a pretty elaborate recovery effort and all here last year.
I'm sure it was. And as the director of safety, you have to look at incidents and accidents that happen under your command.
He put a picture up and said, hey, don't do that.
Yeah,
there are plenty of examples of what not to do out there. But whenever something like that happens, in aviation, if we have a mishap or an event, you know, we have a team that comes in. We have an initial team. Whoever the closest folks are, nearest active duty base is the way that it reads, will come in and do preserve and collect. You know, after we've taken care of all the people and make sure that everything's secure on the site, we have an initial investigating, or actually an initial response, if you will, that collects and preserves information. And then we put together a safety investigation board, or as we call it, a SIB. Then the SIB comes in, and we have about a 30-day period that we try and, you know, do a root cause analysis. You know, peel that onion back and figure out, okay, how do we keep this from happening again?
I guess your accident investigation takes on different structure from a civilian one, because you're dealing with military hardware. You might be dealing with live ordnance. You could be dealing with classified hardware on board the aircraft.
Well, yes, that's a true statement, but I also need to draw a distinction. You called it an accident board, and there's actually two separate investigations that happen on the military side.
Okay.
A safety investigation board, its only purpose in life is mishap prevention. And that's basically, that's what we use it for. There's a separate board that we do called an accident investigation board, and that's run by the lawyers, if you will. That's the publicly releasable culpability, liability, and all that sort of stuff. So we actually have two parallel processes that happen. Our accident investigation board would much more closely align with what the FAA and NTSB do.
Okay.
But our purpose in safety is we get to wear a white hat. Our purpose is, no kidding, how to keep this from happening again.
All right, so you're not there to assign blame?
Nope, not at all. And that's a nice thing, because then people aren't scared when safety shows up in our business. We're the good guys.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, after an accident investigation, do you ever have recommendations as to changes that should be made to training procedures?
Well, that's the entire purpose of a safety investigation board, is to come up with clear, actionable, meaningful recommendations. I mean, you can go through that whole process, but if you don't do exactly what you were talking about right there, what's the point? Because what we want to do is figure out what to change in that set of circumstances, so next time somebody's in that same set of circumstances, they don't end up with the same result.
And I'm sure that once you come up with recommendations, that you pass this along to everybody.
Well, everybody that it applies to. In most cases, I mean, it's pretty confined to within the military. How we train, it could be a piece of hardware, it could be the guidance that we have, full plethora of options out there in terms of recommendations that we can come up with.
Now, what about on the outside chance that you expose a problem with the aircraft? Do you guys go back to the manufacturer?
Oh, certainly. In fact, a lot of cases we use the manufacturers and all as subject matter experts in the process itself. We have engine experts that work, you know, from the manufacturers of the engine. So it's a partnership. It really is.
Sometimes I imagine they're not happy to see you.
Well, a lot of times the manufacturers are integrated into the process itself. I mean,
right from day one.
Yeah, at the Air Force Safety Center, for example, there are representatives from the engine manufacturers that are there and ready. That's their job. So it's a very seamless integration. You know, in the F-16 world, we work with Lockheed Martin Safety very closely. And it's great cooperative. The nice thing about the safety business is it's not confrontational. we're all on the same team and everybody wants the same outcome. So there's no competition, there's no proprietary this or that. Everybody's out for the right interest of not having bad things happen.
So I guess every time you roll out, like now they're transitioning to the F-22s, you guys, your ears perk up because now you're starting over as far as operational safeties go. You're learning new quirks of the new aircraft and...
Well, yeah, every,
you got to really pay attention.
You bet. Every airframe has its own challenges and unique things that happen with it. The F-22 has been in the news a lot lately with some of the issues that it's had and trying to come up with the root cause analysis for that. We're starting just now in the military to get the F-35, so that's a new weapon system. But they do, for example, they have system safety groups that meet on a regular basis. So every airframe, once or twice a year, have all the experts get together, from the people who take care of it on the Air Force side, to the operators, to the manufacturers, to all the different people, and we get together in a forum and talk about issues and identify stuff. What is it that we need to take care of? And it's a great information exchange. On the F-16 side of the house, literally there's hundreds of people because, there's a lot of countries around the world that operate F-16, so they come in also. So we learn lessons from other air forces, and they learn from us. So it's a great cooperation synergy.
What about dealing with the older aircraft? I mean, you're still flying some B-52s and stuff, aren't you? Or did they finally get mustered out?
No, they're still B-52s, but I find it interesting to talk about old aircraft as we're sitting here looking at all the warbirds and all
exactly.
out there. So, yeah,
well,
we face a lot of the same challenges.
That's a whole other set of challenges.
Well, it is. You're exactly right. Keeping things flying a long time, the B-52 certainly is an example of that.
KC-135?
Yeah, and they've been through a lot of maintenance and a lot of different modifications through the years. So, the KC-135 you see sitting out here today externally looks a lot like the other ones, but there's a whole lot of work that's been done over the years to keep them airworthy and to keep them current, both in avionics and in safety.
Very good, very good.
I was going to say the older airplanes, you're probably seeing quirks and things happen to them that nobody ever planned of.
Yeah,
like wing spar problems with age.
Yeah, you have fatigue issues that happen with airplanes and all, and if we do things right proactively, they don't surprise us. We don't want to learn about, an issue because something broke. Fatigue type of stuff, if we do our metallurgy right, if we do that non-destructive inspections and look at the right things at the right time, we'll identify it before it goes bad. And that's our ultimate goal with all that.
I was going to say, you have to have some kind of age-related maintenance inspection program going, especially for the F-15 and F-16. They're both, 30 years plus?
Well, they were built over a period of time, so yeah, there's some that are a lot older than others, but you're right. Every plane has a cyclical inspection cycle built to that specific model. Every airplane after so many hours goes through a phase inspection, which is pretty in-depth, where they tear a lot of stuff apart, look at things, rebuild what needs to be rebuilt, and all that is very, very carefully scripted so that we look at the right things at the right time to keep them airworthy. I mean, if there's any hint that there's an issue with an airplane, certainly on the safety side, we always make the conservative call, make sure that we get the things taken care of before we put airplanes up in the air and put people in harm's way.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Now, you guys are in the International Federal Pavilion?
We are. We're running a booth there. You going to let me tell you about that?
Sure.
All right. In 2005, we kind of started looking at mid-air collisions between military aircraft and civilian aircraft. We operate military airplanes in airspace below 18,000 feet called MOAs, military operating areas, that anybody can fly through. Well, we work in there, and we're doing some complex training missions, and civilian airplanes are legal to fly through there. But it can end up with some interesting conflicts, and interesting in a bad form. So instead of every single base all around the country doing their own thing, we came up with one-stop shopping. You can go to one website now, and you can see where all the airspace is, whether it's active or not. It's a Google map. You can zoom around, look. You can click on the bases, get the information from the different bases, what airplanes and everything. So one-stop shopping, seeandavoid.org. It's a great way for general aviation to know where we are, what we do, so that we don't swap paint.
Well, at the speeds you guys operate, that C part is awfully difficult.
It can be, that's right. So that's when, if somebody's going to go through a military operating area, we always talk and squawk. In other words, if a civilian airplane, you don't have to talk to somebody going in there, but if you tell air traffic control, they can give us a heads up that you're going to be there, and we can avoid you. We don't want to be flying near you all. We want to make sure that we deconflict properly, and if we're aware of you. If we have a second, I can give you real quick, our moniker for that is don't fly naked. And a lot of people kind of look and they wonder what that means. Well, in the fighter pilot business, we have a radar warning receiver in the airplane. When somebody looks at us and we know that they're looking with the radar, the term is we're spiked. When somebody's not looking at the radar, the term is we're naked. So that actually is a fighter pilot terminology that means nobody's looking at me with the radar. So we don't want you all flying out there without somebody looking at you. So hence the term, don't fly naked.